Blog Talk Radio. And Clara Gibson here in Ramsgate with the wonderful Joe Walton.
Oh, Joe Walton is here with us, guys. Joe Walton!
Director of Communications for Ashton, Saving the Planet. So, as you might have guessed, we actually are talking about saving the planet in terms of the energy that we use today, and sustainable energy. And so today, we've got Joe joining us for the second time, actually here in person. We're very lucky, aren't we?
Oh, gosh. I can actually, if I put my hand out, I can actually touch her.
Wow. And she won't fall to pieces. No. Isn't that amazing?
I have to say, a big show-off point here at this point. I went to school with Joanna Walton, so I'm particularly proud of this woman's extraordinary achievements and contributions to changes in working with the environment. And it's just lovely to bring Jo into this scenario where Clara gets to interview her as well. So, Clara, what do you want to ask Jo first of all, as she's here with us today?
Well, I'm really fascinated as to how it was that you first got to work with Ashton. How did you get there? What did it mean to work there for you, Jo?
Well, hello, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you very much for having me here in sunny Ramsgate. It's great to be here in person. Why am I working at Ashton? I think the environment is a calling for me. Many years ago, more years ago than I care to remember, was lucky enough to be in Borneo. And
wonderful. I know somebody who fell off the mountain in
I climbed up that mountain.
Oh, did you?
And after I'd climbed up that mountain, we drove across the top of Borneo and saw the destruction caused to the rainforest by palm oil plantation.
Oh, God.
The ground was just devastated.
Yeah.
And that kind of stayed with me, and I carried on my travels. And when I came back to London, after sort of fiddling around doing a few kind of conventional jobs, I moved over into the voluntary sector and started working for environmental organisations. And in 2005, I was fortunate enough to be asked to do some PR for the Ashton Awards.
Right. So first of all, for the awards
themselves. Right. And the awards at that time, they'd been set up a couple of years previously by an amazing philanthropist, Sarah Butler-Sloss, who saw the need for sustainable energy in the world and saw the impact that sustainable energy could have on people everywhere in the world, literally from Africa to Aberdeen.
Oh, wow.
Ashton was set up by a female philanthropist.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Right, fantastic. Yeah.
And so what difference, can I just ask, how did that sort of impact, was there something different about working in an organisation set up by a woman?
Definitely. At the time, when I started there, my daughter was 10 months old.
Okay.
Sarah had...
Difficult time, actually. Starting to work with a 10-month-old.
Yeah.
Actually.
I had to work when she was sleeping. So a lot of work when she was having a nap after she'd gone to bed. And in those days, I remember sending emails out at 1 o'clock in the morning and getting replies because the other two women, Sarah and Anne, also had young kids.
Love it.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so at that point, we really were all...
flexibly working.
Yeah, deep in the throes of early motherhood.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But also doing this amazingly fulfilling work.
Yeah.
And the thing I think that hooks you in about Ashton is the winners.
Okay.
So we're based around an annual awards program for sustainable energy champions.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to meet every year a dozen or so amazing people.
Wow.
Who are doing a range of fantastic things to improve people's lives through sustainable energy.
That's amazing. So tell us about the range then that you've experienced, you know, up until now.
Yeah. So first of all, thinking about the developing world, so we have winners from Asia, Africa, China, Latin America. And there, often, what our winners are doing is providing electricity
okay.
to people that don't have it.
Wow.
So they're replacing things like kerosene lamps mm. or candles
yeah.
with solar lamps.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're giving people a way to charge their mobile phone. They're giving yeah. people access to the internet because mm-hmm. you can get a computer, but if you can't power it...
Yeah, sure. Expensive. Yeah, yeah.
So they're using technologies like solar.
Yeah.
Small-scale hydroelectricity, so not the stuff where you do the big dams that are environmentally damaging, but small-scale hydro schemes. Biogas, which is taking waste.
Yeah.
Animal waste.
Human waste?
No, usually animal waste
not
or
yet.
Food waste. And using it to generate gas, which can then be used as a clean cooking.
Oh, right. Why don't they use human waste? I'm intrigued.
It does happen.
It could be. Yeah.
Funny enough, we do a little bit in this country because most of the sewage wastewater treatment plants in this country do actually produce biogas, but they use it to run equipment on site. They don't
oh, really?
Export it.
Yeah.
But
tell us about one of those experiences, one of those... I mean, you've recently been...
Yes, this year. So, this year, so where we are in the award cycle, we're just finished our judging for the mm-hmm. 2017 awards.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And right now, my filmmakers are out visiting some of those projects, making films about their work, which will be shown at our awards ceremony in June.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting.
And so do you get to go with them?
Not with the filmmakers, but I went a couple of months ago to visit some of the projects that were on the list.
Right.
So
tell us about your experience. Experiences in Africa because
so I went to
I
Africa.
Just no extraordinary
and
so brave and intrepid.
Well, I'm not anyway. It was Lesotho, which
okay.
is a country in South Africa,
uh-huh.
and quite an interesting country. It's been devastated by HIV, huge, a whole generation virtually
yeah.
wiped out.
God, really.
And we went. To the project make clean cook stoves,
mm-hmm.
which
clean cook stoves.
Okay. So what I mean by that is a stove that people cook their dinner on that still uses wood
mm-hmm.
or charcoal, which is how people traditionally cook, but it's built in a way that is super efficient and it produces far less smoke,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously a big issue for people's health, and uses far less wood, which
mm-hmm.
is a big issue when it comes to deforestation, people chopping down trees
right.
to cook.
And how many are they cooking for? And so is this a single ring? I mean,
imagine a bucket.
Okay.
About the size of a bucket, made out of metal, and so you've got a pot stand on the top,
yeah.
and feed wood in at the bottom. Now, this stove was very innovative because it also has, in the bottom of it, a battery, which is charged by a solar panel.
Wow.
The battery drives a fan, which if you imagine, when you blow on a fire, it makes it burn hotter.
Yeah.
So it burns more efficiently, lights
yeah.
really quickly. But you can also plug in and use the solar power to run a light.
Wow.
So replacing candles or kerosene lamps and to charge your mobile phone.
And that, can I just sort of, in the first question that comes to me
yeah.
with regard to that, is that you've got a stove
yeah.
which has burning wood
yeah.
in it, and underneath it's got a battery. So I'm intrigued as to the, I'd you know, like to see the sort of structure of it more, so that, is it sort of like on legs or something? So,
no.
Because how does the battery not get damaged by the heat of the fire?
Insulation.
Ah,
so
we saw
we went to the factory, saw the stove being made, and what was interesting, again, with this programme is that over half the employees in the factory were women.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Several of them, of the employees
in Lesotho,
in Lesotho,
mm-hmm.
Several of them had disabilities, physical
okay.
disabilities, and several of them were deaf. And they were a very, very egalitarian organisation.
Right.
They had kind of like a foreman who was a woman.
Uh-huh.
So their employment practice is really impressive. The stove has got a lot of insulation around it. So first of all, so you don't waste heat.
Okay.
So the heat all goes to boil your water or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But also there's a thick layer of insulation between where the battery is housed and where the wood is.
Okay.
So there's no issue around the battery getting too hot.
And what's this insulation made of?
A kind of stone, almost like a pumice stone.
Oh right, yeah, that was actually what was coming to mind as you were describing it.
And some of these women are actually, they do live in very rural environments, and they are.
So the stoves, then they have sales teams who go out into to spread the word.
And are they also women?
Some
mainly.
Of them. Yeah, no, the manager of the sales team is a woman. And they go right out. Lesotho, lots of it is very inaccessible. People literally use horses. You can't drive a car.
Right.
Yeah. And they go right out into the rural areas and demonstrate the stove.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to one of those demonstrations, and all these people.
Oh,
here.
God.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Oh,
we drove
amazing.
Village in the middle of nowhere. And we sat and waited, and there was a bit of. We could hear somebody calling. And all these people sort of gradually appear. And so we had a substantial audience, and then they demonstrate the stove.
Yes.
And then they take the orders. And they also
How much are they?
They're expensive. They're $100. But people don't pay for them up front.
Right. Okay.
So there's a credit system, and they pay using their mobile phones. In Africa, mobile money is a really big thing.
Lots
of people use mobile money.
Right.
And so they pay it over a series of months. But the savings that they make in time, collecting fuel,
Real,
or paying for charcoal, pays for the stove quite quickly.
Wow.
But also, don't forget, they're replacing their kerosene expenditure and their candle expenditure
as well.
Because they're also...
And not,
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because just before when we were talking to Jo about her experiences, she told us about this one moment where she had an exchange with a woman who had got this new type of energy that she could have a light through the night.
Yes, we went to visit a lovely, fairly elderly lady who... showed us her stove, which was absolutely pristine. She also valued it greatly. And she said one of the things that made a huge difference to her was that previously she'd always slept with a candle burning because she was afraid, and would have to get up in the night to replace the candle as it burnt down. And obviously there's a fire risk
there. Absolutely. That's what I'm thinking of.
She said, now I can sleep with the light on all night.
Yeah.
I feel
wonderful.
And that is amazing. And she could charge her mobile phone without having to walk a fair distance to somewhere that had electricity to charge her mobile phone.
Fantastic.
So it literally transforms people's lives.
Also interested, because I think people sort of get so used to the way that we live here, and we have cookers with you know, four rings or whatever, and an oven and a grill and all of the rest of it, you know. And how many people are people catering for when they're typically cooking using these stoves?
Probably families of four or six. Sometimes I think people buy more than one stove.
Once
they've paid for the first one, they'll buy a second one.
Okay.
But on the whole, I think the kind of food that they cook tends to be one pot food.
Yes.
So, and actually, some of the stoves were being used by street vendors.
Oh, really?
So people cooking quite big pans of food on the street, and the stove could manage that.
And they're very stable then.
Very stable,
Oh, amazing. Brilliant.
So this is just one of the many innovations that the Ashton has provided for, and that you are leading in this way. How cool are you?
Mm-hmm.
Can you... tell us, I mean, we flirted a little bit with this idea, but I really find this exciting. Tell us about the ideal Ashton world.
I have flirted with the idea of Ashtonville. We've talked quite
Ashtonville.
Ashtonville,
right.
I thought it would be cool. So this is kind of moving away. Let's move away from the developing world a bit, because in Ashton we also reward people in the UK.
Doing
sustainable energy programs in the UK, because it's just as important here. But here, what we're tending to reward is people that are helping us use less energy.
Yeah.
And use energy in a more sustainable way,
mm-hmm.
And not be so profligate.
Yeah.
I thought it would be great to kind of create a town that was Ashton Town. Ashton
How
Bill,
cool!
That was populated by Ashton winners.
Like yeah. Simpsons, like with different households.
Like Sims, I think. Can you build
a Sims? Yes,
I have
actually. But actually, when you consider that there is... at the moment, there is a huge sort of the neighbourhood plans for local authorities. They're all being expected to grow, to build more homes.
Yeah.
Build sort of, and I mean, so Milton Keynes and Stevenage, wasn't it? Both of, or Welland Garden City. Welland Garden City and Milton Keynes were both new towns,
yeah.
weren't they? Which
yeah.
were built fairly idealistically. I'm sort of wondering whether there is a possibility of Ashton, and we're calling out to the world here.
Hello,
and
world.
But also to UK government officials who could perhaps help implement this idea, because whilst there are, you know, calls to build hundreds of thousands of new homes across the country, and there are also, you know, always ever more in, and quite rightly so, requirements for properties to be built more sustainably,
mm-hmm.
but actually they could call upon Ashton to and its past and present and future winners to help design
An Ashtonville equivalent.
And I think
there are.
That would be brilliant.
There are. I mean, people like Kevin MacLeod has built estates where the houses are all have got renewables built in, and the levels of insulation are really high.
Yeah.
I would say arguably this government isn't doing enough when it comes to regulation.
Really?
In
right.
terms of new build.
Right.
So on the way here, I drove past a new estate. One of the houses had stuck some solar PV on the roof, and mm-hmm. I was just thinking, why on earth didn't they make that
That's
integral when
yeah.
they built those houses? And it's a cost issue
that
at
is.
The moment.
It's
the cost of PV has come down enormously, and with people like Tesla in the States, it's coming down even more, because Elon Musk is investing huge amounts in renewable technology.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fascinating.
But actually, even if we do that, still, lots of the housing that people will live in 100 years' time
yeah.
is already built. So what's
yeah.
really important in this
yeah,
country
yeah.
is
mm-hmm.
retrofitting existing mm-hmm. houses to make them more energy
yeah.
efficient.
Yes,
but
I do.
Because you mentioned Tesla, and I'm quite interested that he has a technology, or developed a technology quite some years ago, didn't he, that meant that people could generate their own electricity in their own homes. It's a particular kind of battery system.
No, that's about storage.
But that's about storage.
About storage. So one of the big issues with renewables, so I've got solar PV on my roof at
mm-hmm.
home. And a lot of the time I work at home during the day, which is great because it means if the sun's shining,
mm-hmm.
I can run and put the washing machine on and
yes.
use that electricity that I'm generating.
Yeah.
But there's no way of storing it.
Okay.
So at night I have to still be connected to the grid,
okay.
draw down energy from the grid.
Right.
And what Tesla
mm-hmm.
have been working on
mm-hmm.
and came out a couple of years ago is batteries for home energy storage. They're still big. They're the size of a fridge.
Right.
That's the problem. But battery technology
yeah.
is improving all the time. But that has been one of the big barriers to really making the leap to renewables.
Yeah.
Is how do you store energy so that you've got it when the sun's not shining or wind's not blowing?
Right.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is at cost currently, which is why this isn't being fed through the system via
yeah.
government.
But also, isn't there an issue, though, as well, that the power companies actually really don't want too much regeneration,
because they
won't,
they don't be billionaires.
Well,
so.
No, but I mean, the UK has got carbon reduction targets that we have to meet. We have
mm-hmm.
committed to them, and so there is overall a programme of bringing more renewables onto the grid in this country.
Right.
Last year, we had a couple of winners that were doing what we call smart energy. So what they're helping to do is change the way, and I'm not going to get really technical. It is really, really technical boffin stuff.
Yeah.
But we all know that there are times when there are big demands for energy from the national grid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's ad breaking.
When
things
are on.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone puts their kettle on.
Gogglebox, apparently.
Heavens to watch Neighbours or whatever ghastly programme they watch.
And so one of our winners last year, their work, they're called Open Energy, and what they do is they work with big users of energy to help manage the demand. So they're balancing the grid.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
If you run a big supermarket full of chiller cabinets, you're drawing down electricity all the time.
Yeah.
But if you imagine, if you turn your chiller cabinet off momentarily, it doesn't affect the temperature. It takes a long time for the temperature in that cabinet or in freezer to come up to where it's a problem.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm running the national grid and I see that I've got a big spike of energy coming, a big energy demand, I can say to you, Clara, I'm going to momentarily turn your freezers off.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Rosie, I'm going to momentarily turn your chiller cabinets off.
Mm-hmm.
And that reduces the demand
usage
from you, which means that the grid can, it flattens out those peaks.
Yeah.
And that means you can integrate more renewables.
It's directing energy, really. Yeah.
And it saves the people energy.
It does. It does.
So they just, because they don't realise how much they don't need to be using
all the time.
All the time. So in fact, could they not also just have a system that, you know, maybe for, I wonder what difference it would make if every 5 minutes in the hour the chiller cabinets would be turned off.
I think there are moves to do that sort of thing. And in the home as well.
We need more academics on this. And I believe the future is in our children. So can I go?
Oh, yes, now, Rosie has got...
I really believe in this, guys. I would love to start. I mean, I think there are probably a good few out there already, but the idea of free schools where they are focused around environmental issues and helping our young children change the world for us, with us. And there's not enough of it going on. Jo is the ambassador for a fantastic program that is actually rolling out to my school as well as others that have been across this country, and it's called the Less COT program, isn't it, Jo?
That's right.
Can you praise me a bit about it?
Yeah, so one of the things that Ashton has done over the years is reward lots of schools that are doing really, really good work on managing their energy use. And back in 2010, I got together a group of our winning schools and we piloted what we were calling Less CO2. And basically that gets a winning school, so they're exemplars, they're brilliant, they're absolutely amazing Ashton Award-winning schools, get them to work with a group of schools that are geographically near to them.
Oh, right, so there's like a hub school.
They are the centre of the hub, and we run a year-long program for schools to help them reduce their energy use, which in these straitened times when schools are being asked to slash their budgets left, right and centre,
it's very useful.
Really, really useful.
Mention igniting some interest in a child that will change the future.
So we cover in the program, there are four workshops and there's mentor support in between. Mm-hmm. So if people are having problems, they can speak to their mentor. And we look at the building. So we look at what you can do, whether it's improving heating controls, double glazing, changing a light bulb to low energy bulb. We look at behaviour change, so actually getting people to think how they use a building.
Turn it off, everybody, turn it off. That's all I remember.
You've got it
I toddle around at home and I just think, Joe says, turn it off.
Yeah. Turn it off. If you're not using it, turn it off.
Yeah.
And curriculum. So we look at integrating sustainability into the curriculum across a range of areas. So if you think about it, if you're teaching maths, why not take your energy bills and look at how much energy you've used
or calculate energy usage?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, in PSHE, which is part of the curriculum, I think Ofsted have constructed elements of this to be incorporated, which links also to community work. So there is some kind of perception going on, but it's not enough, guys. It's not enough. We need more of it.
Well, it needs to be just sort of through all schools.
Absolutely.
Really,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because actually, then children, it's a bit like, you know, teaching children about smoking. And when they'll go home and they'll start teaching their parents that they shouldn't smoke.
Yes, yes. Clara, and you'll know, you know about and this so, experience of working with children in that way as well, won't you?
But actually, it'd be so interesting to actually just be aware of the waste. You know, I mean, because you have people, I remember in health visiting, and you would go into people's homes and they would have the TV on and the radio on and they would have the lights on because it just sort of looked bright, you know. And you just sort of think, oh my God, you don't, what terrible waste.
There really isn't. Another one of the winners that, not a winner, sorry, one of this year's finalists that I visited this year are doing exactly that through a smart thermostat, which they're putting into social housing.
Mm-hmm.
So property owned by housing associations.
Yeah. So cool.
And the one that I visited, there was a young mum there, 3 kids under 6. Last year, her fuel bill for the winter was over £600.
Wow.
And since having the smart thermostat installed, she'd half that.
That's brilliant.
I can spend that money on my children.
Yeah,
yeah.
Great.
Absolutely.
So that's why we always say about sustainable energy, it's a win-win-win. There are more than, it benefits people, it benefits the planet.
Yeah.
It has multiple benefits. It's
well, and win-win situations are really what you always want, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have greater motivation when they realise that they, you know, the individuals benefit as a result of it.
Yeah.
Really.
Joe, have I told you today how much I love you?
Every day.
I think as we're drawing towards the end of the programme, it might be a really, really important thing to just touch on your experience as a woman going into this field and how you feel about what your life's work has been about, really, in relation to this. Tell us about that.
I just value the opportunity to do something that I think makes a difference in my own tiny way,
mm-hmm.
By supporting people that are really doing it in a big way. That's the exciting thing.
Right.
Well, it's facilitating, though.
Absolutely,
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And collaborating.
Yeah.
I like that word. And I think there's not enough of that word about.
But Ashton, we very much see ourselves as conveners. We bring people together, we facilitate, and we enable people to share their learning, their expertise, so that everybody can live a better, more comfortable, more productive, healthier life. And that's
it's interesting, though, isn't it? Because quite often people ask me, you know, how are you creative? And I sort of say, well, I see creativity in a whole variety of ways.
Absolutely.
So actually, what you are doing with Ashton and what you're doing with Ashton and what then Ashton is doing and facilitating with others is undoubtedly creative.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
it's just so interesting, isn't it? Because people have these sort of like very sort of boxed definitions of things, which in themselves are very limiting.
Yeah.
You know, whereas there are such hugely diverse ways that people can be creative.
And Joe personally managed it.
Which is,
people ask me how I got my job, and I say I started off doing a textile design degree, and that's how I ended up doing my job. So,
and I think that's actually part of the course, that sometimes it's really important to try out things that aren't immediately obvious, but that do call out to you when you start them. And I think that that's now become a life's passion.
Absolutely.
So, Jo, we've got to say a huge thank you to you to coming in today. And, Clara, what would you like to say to my lovely darling Jo?
Well, I think it's wonderful. I think it's really very, very exciting. But actually, right, there is one thing I do want to ask Jo about. So you've got the awards ceremony in June.
Oh, yes, of course.
And you've got somebody very exciting coming to talk, haven't you? So please tell us.
We've got Al Gore.
Al Gore. Oh, wow. I'm coming.
We're coming.
I'm buying my ticket.
Yeah. 15th of June.
Central London.
So anyone can buy a ticket.
Anyone can buy a ticket for a mere 30 £30
mere
to come
30
and hear
pounds.
From the great Al Gore his view on what's going on in the world of sustainable energy.
And
right
he's
now.
Really informed and
yeah, he's got a new film coming out in July.
And so now, because we put it on radio, we've actually got to get our tickets actually today.
Woo-hoo!
Because otherwise, in fact, we could almost be out of the chance of getting the tickets because people should be listening to this So, Jo, thank you so much
you
for having
you,
this. That was a really, really
we've had
fascinating,
a fabulous time
fascinating program
thank
today.
You so much for coming in.
Thank you ever so much.
And goodbye,
bye.
Everybody. Bye, Eco Warrior.
Bye-bye. There we go. That is...
Oh, my God.